Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There we go. We got the new the soundtrack for this film sorted.
Oh, we've got the new sound effects.
Yeah. Oh,
the, a close up on Alan Bates's face. John Hurt finds out that his bicycle tire is flat. So I've got a new pad. I've got a new pad that a guy called Gary gave me the other day.
Mm-hmm. Was that what, before you went back into prison?
Yeah. And I've got this, that many notes from the first half hour of the shout.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's as far as I got. I got as far as Alan Bates coming round for lunch, inviting himself in.
Yeah.
And then what's her name? Is it Susan Hampshire or someone like that? Just, looking at him like, he's... Well, he's got such a thick neck.
Not much happens after that. So let's get into it. And then
yes.
All right. Should we start?
All right. Yeah. Let me.
Even though we already have started.
Britain. An ancient kingdom with legends of violence, cruelty, and torment in its blood. Join your hosts, Ross, John, and James, as they bravely tread where few would dare. Witness their journey into the horrific history of British horror. They are... The General Witchfinders.
Ladies and gentlemen, goblins and ghouls, welcome back to the 35th episode of the General Witchfinders podcast. I'm James in Bournemouth in southern England.
I'm John in Treforest, which is in South Wales, which is in the south of Wales.
I'm Ross in Dorchester in southern England, and this time we witnessed the shout.
Greater than the frightening power of exorcism. More mystifying than any omen of reincarnation. The soul-shattering experience of The Shout. You are looking at a man possessed of baffling powers.
His name is Charles Crossley. He's incredibly well read.
The power to take the souls of others.
Oh, yes, it's true. If a young man wants a girl for his wife, he steals some trivial possession from her, casts a spell over it, And then she finds him irresistible.
That's funny. Just buckle.
Alan Bates is Crossley, master of primitive man's deepest secrets. And they are all dwarfed by his awesome shout.
If I shouted for you now, you would die. As would your wife and anyone else around here.
Susanna York is Rachel. First her soul, then her whole being possessed by the man with the shout. John Hurt is Anthony. His only chance to break the spell is in a stone. But which stone and where?
Find you. Find you.
How long do you think you'll be able to stay?
Months. So you'd better make yourself scarce.
It's not entirely normal.
Oh, and what's normal?
That's normal.
The magician of the tailcoat gave me a terrible power over my enemies. He taught me the use of the terror of the shot. Now I can kill with it. Kill. Instantly.
Prepare yourself. Every muscle, every nerve, for the ultimate soul-shattering experience of the shout.
Should I do this in the background while James is talking?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, only for dramatic points, I think.
So, okay. The Shout is a 1978 British horror film directed by Jerry Skolimowski, who was also an actor in Mars Attacks and played a general in Marvel's The Avengers, apparently, according to it. So that's news to me. It was based on a short story by Robert Graves, author of I, Claudius, or I, Clavdibs, and great friend of Spike Milligan, with whom the 1960s until his death, he frequently exchanged letters, many of which are collected in the book Dear Robert, Dear Spike.
Okay, in the in the notes, because I got the DVD, the Blu-ray for this, in the notes, it says that he had an unconventional romantic liaison in school with Spike Milligan.
Ooh.
Oh, God.
Okay. But I can't find any other more evidence of that anywhere on the internet, so I don't know if that's something Kim Newman made up. But
possibly.
Is he a contemporary of Spike, or is he younger?
I don't know.
Did they go to school together?
Well, I would hope so. Otherwise, one of them is abusing the other, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, let's move swiftly on from that.
Yeah, anyway, that bit will all be...
put in the bonus section.
Right. Beeped out.
Right, so... Graves' short story was adapted for the screen by Skolimowski and Michael Austin, screenwriter of Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes. Insane film. The film was the first to be produced by Jerry Thomas under his Recorded Picture Company banner. Thomas went on to produce and executive produce 70 more films to date, including Naked Lunch, The Last Emperor, Crash, The Great Rock and Roll Swindle, Sexy Beast, and High Rise. What a CV. What a CV that is. That's
I didn't
superb.
Like High Rise, though.
No, I went on way too long.
All right. Okay.
But okay, did you see who his father and uncle were?
I know his father was a filmmaker, but I didn't... Who was he?
So I can't remember which way around it is, but his father directed every Carry On film.
Right.
Oh.
And his uncle... But I can't remember which way around it was. Did all of the Doctor in whatever?
With James Brooks films. And Justice.
Yeah. James Robertson Justice falling into a bath full of custard while nurses try and inject him. Rip.
You need a synthesizer that just makes those noises, John.
Yeah, well, I can try with this one. Hang on. It's not so. Oh, that was quite good, wasn't it? Hang on.
Well, I think you need to re-edit a Carry On film with those sounds. I think that's
James Robertson Justice falls into the bath,
which is in another dimension. Sci-fi remix. Right, okay. So the interiors for this film were shot at Pinewood Studios. The film sets were designed by the art director Simon Holland, who was responsible for Quadrophenia, Buster, Nuns on the Run, which I saw in the cinema, and King Ralph. The North Devon coast. Yeah, the North Devon coastline, specifically Saunton Sands and Braunton Burrows, were used for the bulk of the location shooting. The Church of St. Peter's in Wesley was used for the church scenes. The soundtrack is by Michael Rutherford and Tony Banks of the rock band Genesis. No Phil Collins, no Peter Gabriel involved in this in any way, shape, or form. And they did it after the original
or Brian
choice.
Eno.
Oh, exactly. Yes, quite. Well, after the original first choice, David Bowie turned it down. When heard in theaters in Dolby Stereo, it was orally separating and distorting. Reportedly, 40 different music tracks were used for the sound, when it was usual for films of this era to use just four. The film was nominated for the Palme d'Or at the 1978 Cannes Film Festival, apparently so, and received the grand prize of the jury in a tie with Bye Bye Monkey, a film starring Gérard Depardieu about a man who finds the corpse of King Kong and Kong's orphan son and takes it to a friend who lives in the city and they decide to raise it.
Yep.
Who knew?
That is on YouTube as well. I've watched some bits of it and the corpse of Kong they find is incredibly badly rendered.
This is like a dark era for cinema's history, isn't it? Like the late 70s, early 80s, a lot of weird shit was happening.
Yeah, and
which
got
I
on
think
the cinema.
Is which I think is often kind of thrown into deep shade by things like Star Wars and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But lots of weird films were kind of, and this is one of the weirdest from what I've the first half an hour that I've seen.
I think you should maybe explain to the well, you don't need to explain yourself, John.
Just explain to the listener. Dear listener, I've been we've had difficulty reconvening this because we've all been so busy.
Yes.
And then today we've been in the emergency vets with the cat. So I've watched the first half an hour of the film, which to be honest, wasn't the best way to decompress after being in an emergency vets.
Mm-hmm.
While people, you know, are having their animals put down. A dog was brought in that had been run over on the motorway, et cetera.
Yeah. It worked well with Hellraiser, but you stopped watching Hellraiser halfway through. So we thought
we can manage this. We can riff on it.
Yeah, we can riff on it. I've watched it.
You can explain it to me.
Yeah. And like I said, I've watched it loads of times because we have to abandon it. Every time we say we're going to do this, I watch the film because I can't remember it. Then we abandon it. And then I watch it. Six or seven times, maybe.
Ross, cursed to watch The Shout for all eternity.
Well, I've gone through like a phase of hating it, loving it, and I'm back to hating it again.
Now. Okay. Oh, really?
Okay. Okay.
I quite liked what I saw. This is one I've wanted to watch for a while that I hadn't heard of, and it's come into my kind of radar quite recently as being a kind of cult film. So I did want to see it. I haven't felt disappointed so far, but nor have I seen any glimpse of a kind of story.
Mm. Well, I've got the short story because it is based on a short story by Robert Graves. So I went and I got the book.
Look at that cover.
The book has got a picture of Alan Bates shouting on the cover.
Doing that.
It just looks like a kind of prog rock album kind of cover, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
And it's got, when they have those great bad quality, like, set photos in there. My favourite books growing up were when you could see that there were some white pages in the middle of photographs from the film. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Star Wars and Gremlins.
Star Trek motion picture, probably. Yeah.
So the two things that I want to bring to the table before we get going on this is that number one, because of course it's freely available on YouTube, this film, dear listener, so you can watch it for nothing.
Oh, is it?
But
we got told off last time we said that, didn't we?
Oh, all right. Okay. Or you can invest in it and buy it for yourself.
I bought the Blu-ray.
And Ross did do that.
I paid to watch it on BFI.
Oh, lovely. So when I was putting the search for it, the other thing that came up was a 2-minute introduction from Mark Kermode done for the BFI. And I have to say that what he said, so you know, this is why I'm flagging it up, I totally agree with what he said. And he, of course, also cites great touchstone for the podcast, Kim Newman, with what Kim Newman says about it, which is this is part of a genre of British films which aren't quite horror films, but they're unsettling. And he also says this shares something in common with The Wicker Man in that it features normal kind of day-to-day sort of mundane life with something weirdly supernatural injected into it.
Yes.
And I would say, yeah, absolutely. That was very much, I then started watching it and thought, I think that's a very, very fair.
Kim Newman also said on the Blu-ray commentary, I listened to that, I'm the person people get on to do commentaries when no one else wants to talk about something.
It's all right. Yeah. Hey, man, if there's a paycheck in it. And then the other thing why I was really looking forward to doing this one, and I think I mentioned it on one of the podcasts before, is that I once saw an excerpt from this during a BBC TV series, which was called, and I've researched it today, Best of British, which was narrated by John Mills.
And was it on like a Friday?
Well, incredibly, John. It ran from 1987 to 1994.
Yeah. I remember it really well.
Yeah, yeah.
And what they would do? It would show clips from.
You've got
yes.
it.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah,
on
yeah.
a certain theme.
Yes,
aka the hero.
Yeah,
villains. The war, etc., etc.
House invasion for people who have sex with your wife.
Yeah, well, yes, and some of that. And I definitely remember them sort of describing the plot of the film. And I would have been 11 or 12, thinking, oh, wow, that sounds eerie and weird. And the bit that they showed at the time, at 11 or 12, I just remember thinking, this film looks bizarre and insane. And it was so out of kilter with everything else that they would show in this nice little half an hour package.
Yeah, like clips from the Dam Busters or like...
Exactly.
But the bit, the film, I can't remember which film it is now, and you'll have to bleep this out, Cleves, but the bit where they've got a dog called...
Yeah, that's Dam Busters.
That is Dam Busters, isn't it? Yeah. So it's like stuff like that, you know, happy-go-lucky. Mm. But no, I do remember that, James, and I feel like it was on... It might have been on BBC Two, and it was a bit of a filler in the schedule. But
was.
I feel like it was on like on a 7:30 on like a Wednesday or a Friday.
That's
night.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then in the afternoon then.
Yes.
And so same time Rolf's Cartoon Club was on.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Let's move on from that. Right. Yeah. So those were my kind of two points of reference going into this. And then, so I watched it and it was always nice. It's nice to see, isn't it? It starts off with something that you don't really see anymore, which is the Rank Organization.
Yeah.
J.R. the Rank. Boing. The guy hitting the guy in his pants. He looks kind of, I don't know if this is my imagination, really, but I was going to say, he looks like he's slightly oiled up. Isn't he?
Yeah, definitely.
Gong, the gong smasher. Yeah, yeah.
I can remember that being on the news when they had a new man.
Yes,
to do that part. So
it's also the name of the Smiths' live album.
The gong smasher.
Rank. Rank, and it's actually named after J. Arthur Rank.
Yes,
I think Morrissey wrote it down and said Rank, as in J. Arthur.
So, John, I thought you would have enjoyed the opening scene of the car.
Yeah, me too.
Any comment on
that? Well, it's a 2CV. I don't know if it's a Diane or if it is just a 2CV. I can't remember now. But a Diane was like an update of a 2CV that had square headlights rather than round headlights. There's a Mini Clubman there, which I think you see John Hurt driving later, which is a very interesting kind of pewter colour, which I'm not really aware of. And then there is another kind of Roots group, kind of limousine style car there, like a Humber or something like that. But I'm not sure what else. But that opening shot reminded me quite a lot of our friend, the Stone Tape, where you see all the cars in the car park. And it's like someone just drives in. So she drives in, and then she goes in and all the bodies are in the... It's a very strange opening, isn't it? So Susan Hampshire gets out of her 2CV, De Cheveux. It's called a 2CV because it's got two horsepower. And that's what... It was meant to be able to carry, I think, 4 farm labourers in comfort over a ploughed field. That's the that's the suspension settings that they went for, and there was enough space.
That's the French for you.
Yeah, there was enough space in it to carry a picnic, and I think
you can
also take the chairs out.
Yes.
But you can certainly do that in the Renault 4 as well, I think.
These are exactly the things we're going to need in cars in a couple of years' time when the whole world goes to shit.
So she goes in and she goes into this general purpose kind of hospital environment, which looks exactly like every episode of Hammer House of Horror, which is made around the same time. Yeah. And then she's sewn a load of bodies in a...
on the tables in a dining room.
Is it like a luncheon hall or something like that?
Yeah, it's a dining room, yeah.
And then is Alan Bates uncovered at that point?
I think? But I don't think it's clear who you are. Yeah, because it's the doctor. Mm-hmm.
Jim Broadbent.
Jim Broadbent. And then the last one's Alan Bates.
I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but I thought part of this story, or part of the whole idea of this film, is that what you see when we're told the John Hurt story is entirely told in flashback.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that the characters that you're seeing in the asylum setting are the guy telling the story, him using these people to populate his story.
Yes.
Or have I read that totally wrong?
Yes, but he isn't, because at the end they take the necklace off of him
when he's got the
stuff. But yeah, the whole thing is about its unreliable narrative. And it's the story's being told, then the story's inside the story, and at one point he says, this is a true story, but I do change the order.
Yes.
And what happens, but it's essentially a true story. And I'm
playing all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order.
Yeah, but I think it's talking about, you know, where is the truth in the story?
Yes.
You know, is it more to do with the meaning is the truth rather than the actual events which
narrative.
Yeah.
Yes. Interesting. So then it starts and you've got a good cast. You can see in a horrible sans serif 1970s typeface, which is
whilst an Aborigine, he's walking towards the camera.
So the figure on the beach always makes me think of "Oh, Whistle and I'll Come to You." So it's always a bit, they're always on slightly dodgy ground with something like that. But also it looks like, is he meant to be in the Sahara, or is it just looks like,
I think it's meant to
be non-sea.
I think it's meant to be the outback, but it's basically the same dunes which they're using for the rest of the film as well.
Yes. It really reminds me of the Hammer House of Horror episode, The House That Bled to Death, where in the ending, you're meant to think that, the characters have moved to Miami, but actually it's obviously just someone's swimming pool in like Boreham Wood or somewhere on a really like wet, horrible
day.
So Cleveland
with Del Boy going past on a jet ski.
And the music at this point sounds a bit hooey, I thought. When James did Quadrophenia, I thought it sounds like the start of a Who film. It's really weird music, isn't it? It's like music that's not really there.
I thought that, bearing in mind they make all this brouhaha about the fact that it's, you know, two members of Genesis, there's not much incidental music.
No.
There's some weird sounds. John, that might be your cue there.
Hang on.
There's things like that, but there's no, like, oh, here's... Yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of that going on. But
is it as good as that, though, James?
No, it's not as good as that. But I just wanted to flag up that as I was watching it, and as the credit, because it's one of those films which you don't really get anymore, where they put the credits up at the start.
If there's any film that does that, they
straight off. Down. Right. And there were two names that just leapt out at me. Right. First of all, project development. Peter Van Praag. And his surname was spelled P-R-A-A-G-H.
A-G.
Ah! Peter Van Praag. So that's really, shout, really satisfying. It is.
Yeah.
That was really satisfying. And the stagehand was someone called Clunky Hughes. I thought, you don't get people called Clunky anymore, do you?
See what else other films Clunky Hughes did. What? How'd you spell it, James?
C-L-U-N-K-Y. Space Hughes.
Was he Clunky? Not called Chunky?
Clunky. I double checked.
Well, I thought it.
Well, it says Clunky Hughes on WC Clunky Hoops.
Clunky. Yeah.
I think I misread it as chunky, and thought that hoofs was like hues, but like just a different spelling.
Known for Willow, Moonraker, and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, apparently.
Oh, wow. Lovely.
Moonraker, you can't be Bond in space, can you?
And is that the one where Jaws bites, when they're in
yes.
When they're in Rio, yes. and Jaws bites through the ropes of the cable cars?
It's the best Bond film, in other words, James.
He worked in 77 films. The last one we did was A Cinderella Story.
Oh, wow.
In 2011. And, yeah.
I don't remember
He worked
one.
On The Crow, Super Mario Brothers. Last of the Mohicans.
Clunking away.
Yeah. Spies Like Us.
Spies Like Us.
Supergirl. Octopussy. Star Wars. Return of the Jedi.
I used to really fancy the girl in Supergirl.
Yes.
Helen. What was her name? Was it Helen Slater or something like
yes.
that?
Yes. Absolutely. First
incredible.
Time.
Yeah, but what a rubbish film with
it
Peter
is.
Cook.
Dreadful.
Yeah.
Yes.
His first film was called The Mini Mob.
So you've got all these really weird characters are introduced with this really frenetic handheld camera work.
Mm.
And then Tim Curry pops up, and then this woman comes to the top of the stairs and is like, don't try and look at my skirt. But then weirdly, everyone's voices are dubbed, which gives it this really strange feel. So then you go outside to where they're setting up a cricket match, which is this kind of overarching introduction. It feels like someone who isn't British, i.e. the director, trying to do a bit of a metaphor for English life or kind of English country life. But you've got these weird kind of dubbed voices for old people. Where one of the old men is going, you old cow. But it's obvious he's not saying that.
Yeah.
Well, it's someone else dubbed. It's just really weird.
And it's not clear that this is a mental assignment, isn't it?
No. No, not at
you
all.
You have to kind of try and pick that up from what's going on.
It's very 60s. It's a bit like a wacky 60s vibe.
Yes. Well, I thought the whole thing is that the vibe, the feeling that I got was it's all very R.D. Lang.
If who's that?
R.D. Lang was the kind of radical psychologist in the 1960s who said, you know, well, we shouldn't medicate people. We just, you know, people that are insane, they're in a schizophrenic. We just need
to
talk to the man and just treat them like they're normal people and you know, had therapy where he just got them to do lots of art as well and things like that. And he wrote a very famous book called Knots, K-N-O-T-S. Since then, you know, his theories have been sort of partially, you know, kind of discredited by the psychiatric community.
Debunked.
But at the same time, lots of people, and he is still a name that comes up a lot in his whole thing of, well, you know, if someone's mentally unwell, the way that you help them is to sort of help them think through what's the matter with them. Don't. And so this whole kind of, well, we're going to have a game of cricket and we're going to treat everyone like they're normal. I thought, oh, yes. This is all kind of R.D. Lang-esque vibes. That's what I put.
Constant craving.
Oh my god!
I started singing that and realised I didn't know the tune. So,
but you're kind of left to choose for yourself who is mad and who is normal at this point, are you? And then you're introduced to the frankly tedious and really annoying character that Alan Bates is playing.
It made me think of art school posturing where people going to wear this outfit because it makes me look cool, and I'm going to sit with my legs sprayed really far apart
turn up to something I'm not invited to.
Yeah.
Talk boring shit.
Yeah.
The character, Alan Bates's character, really is very much like, so me and Cleaver went to art college. James, you escaped that,
tedium. That
but you do have people that are the art school knobs that don't, and I'm not talking specifically about people here that we've known, but, you know, they dress in a certain way and they're just pompous. They're kind of, armchair theorists, aren't they? And they've got no real backup so they might actually be quite handsome or attractive in some way, but actually they're just really boring people. And you're just like, oh God, oh, as he turned up. And I think that's Alan Bates in this film from what I've seen to this point, which is this kind of COD psychology bullshit.
Mm. Yeah, and, just from making shit up to make yourself feel interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I once wrestled an octopus. Mm. Or like, I was asked to join Formula One, but I was too tall for the cars. You know, it's just that kind of absolute bullshit. So, yeah, so we've got this. So within this kind of idea of this kind of archetype of the English cricket match,
yes,
we've got this sequence with Alan Bates where he starts to tell his story to Tim Curry.
Yeah, in a shed.
Hold on.
Where they do the scoring. So there's always a shed.
It's a scorer's box, Ross.
Yes.
Yes.
So I do not know anything about
not cricket. A cricket box.
No.
No, that'd be a very different thing. But yeah, so just for people listening along, just to clarify, Tim Curry turns up. He is seemingly an outsider in some way, shape, or form. He's also a supposed psychiatrist, a doctor. And then the man who is running the institute and is seemingly behind this, this weird cricket match, he says, right, you do the scoring. And then he says, I want you to meet somebody. And he says, he's the most incredibly intelligent person you'll ever meet. And all of this stuff. And he's like, I want you to do the scoring with him. And it's Alan Bates. So Tim Curry and Alan Bates sit down inside this cricket scoring box.
Yes.
And whilst they're in there and they start watching the game and we are introduced to, other characters that are in the mental institution and other people that are watching, the camera pans around and we see them. It's very bucolic. So it's really, really beautiful. Wherever they're filming it, it's very, very, it's archetypal British countryside. Mm. Although it's the world's worst cricket pitch. It's dreadful. It's just there's no markings or line to it whatsoever.
Yes.
But anyway, that's a whole different thing. And then, so while these two guys are in this cricket scorer's box, Alan Bates turns to Tim
Frank
Curry.
Frankenfurter,
exactly. And after his Frankenfurter pomp, but before he went off to America to be in It and Muppet. Monster Island, etc.
Was he in one where, was it a bit like Cluedo or something like
yes.
that?
Clue. Where yeah, Clue, in, which is
Clue,
which is
yes, yeah, 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 yeah. He was in that one. That was always on a Saturday night on BBC One before like Noel's House Party or something.
Is it true?
It was on late.
Is it true that Clue had different endings?
Yes, Ross, yes.
Oh.
When you watch it on TV, you get all of the endings.
Right.
But when they released it in the cinema, it went out with different endings. And so depending
choose
on where
your
you
own
saw
endings.
It, you got,
do you remember those books where you could choose your own ending?
Yeah. Choose your own adventure books are the best. But
they were weird, weren't they?
We're told, first of all, that one of the people bowling is one of the patients, but we're also told that he used to play cricket for England, which they just kind of skirt over.
But he's too dangerous because he would throw the ball at the people.
Yes.
Was there a thing called Bodyline?
Yeah, well, it's not a film. Right. It was a TV series, Ross, which is all about...
They dragged that out.
Dragged out? It was brilliant. It's all about how England went down to Australia to play the Ashes, and they incorporated a new style of bowling, which was really, really physical. And so it wasn't that old kind of Victorian gentleman kind of, well, I shall give you a chance to score, sir. So, you would pitch him up and literally hit the player.
Mm.
The Australian team featured Don Bradman. This is thrilling, I'm sure, for our teenage listeners right now. But anyway, the series.
James, do you really think we've got teenage listeners?
you know what I mean. But the series featured Agent Smith. From the mate, what's his name?
Wolfie Smith.
No,
Lindsay.
No, the Australian actor. He was in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. He was Agent Smith.
Guy Pearce.
No, the other one.
Beck, who played Elrond?
Him.
Who?
Hugo Weaving.
Thanks, Beck.
So,
it featured Hugo Weaving. Hugo Weaving said it. But anyway.
Where is Beck? Is she sat on the toilet watching you, Cleves?
Yeah, no, she's sitting in the corner doing some work.
Oh, yes.
But I've got a mattress in between us to muffle any noise.
Married life, eh, Cleves?
Yeah. So, the line that I wrote down when describing this bowler, he's magnificently bad-tempered. And I thought, I just want someone to describe me as being magnificently bad-tempered. That's great. So after this, the game of cricket begins. A person is bowled out, and then the new batsman who goes in is...
TV's John Hurt.
Pre-alien the Elephant Man, John
Pre-war
Hurt.
Pre-war Doctor.
Yes, all of the above. In comes John Hurt, and then Alan Bates says, I know him, or, you know, he's a person of some notoriety, so on and so forth. And then Tim Curry is, oh, really? And then I put down, this is a line that even in reality or in films, the moment someone goes, I'm about to tell you a story, and you must trust me, but every word I'm about to tell you is true. I'm like, I'm 100% on board. Yeah. Whatever you're about to tell me, yes.
I was thinking, this is the moment I'd just be like, sorry, there's just somewhere I've got to be. And I would literally leave, because I know it's going to be the fantasy of some. I've been to so many car shows where I've heard so many classic car owners tell totally fabricated stories about how they've, crashed a Ferrari in like the Bryn Glas tunnels in Newport. That's a real
arm
story.
Arm wrestle Stirling Moss. That sort of thing.
At this juncture, I just want to point out that, the 50th Doctor Who new adventure, which was called, oh shit, I can't remember what it, but I read it on the coach to Nebworth to see Oasis.
Yeah. Oh,
what's it called? We're going to have to Google this. But that the central part of that novel is also a cricket match. And this cricket match in this film really suddenly, out of nowhere, made me think of that Doctor Who novel, which I haven't read since 1996, on the bus to see Oasis in Nebworth. And it was just this really weird kind of thing that just came out of nowhere that was like, oh, this really reminds me of that Doctor Who novel. Just the imagery, because obviously it's a book. It's, you know, it's how I imagined and that novel is set in 2010.
Oh,
so I read it in 1996, and it's already 13 years in the past now, which is quite weird.
Happy Endings by Paul Cornell.
Happy Endings by Paul Cornell, who we previously spoke to on a different iteration of this podcast.
Yeah, about a book he didn't write, and then he got a bit annoyed with us about it.
Well,
what did it? Was that you, Cleaver, that saying me, that?
Yeah.
What book did you say that he wrote?
I started talking about Lungbarrow, and he did it right. Someone else wrote it.
And weirdly enough, Mark just add to that, see if we get sued over this. But many years later, I and my friend Matt ran a panel at a comics convention in Cheltenham.
Yeah.
And we did a comics version of Just a Minute, the Radio 4 show. So it was just like a lighthearted panel thing. It's just a break from middle-aged men talking about how hard can Batman punch people and things like that. Right.
Yeah.
So, and Cornell put himself forward to be on the panel.
No way.
And the panel included the kind of anime artist Sonia Leong, who was really great fun.
Yeah.
Jeff Furman, one of the guys who did the 1980s Transformers comics.
Yeah, yeah. Do you mean Simon Furman?
Furman.
Yeah,
Simon.
Yeah.
You're quite right. That's my mistake.
Simon Furman, and it's Jeff Senior. Jeff Senior was the artist.
They're my two favorite.
Yeah.
And he was great fun.
Yeah.
And then we had Paul Cornell. Mm. And all I'll say is Cornell kicked up a massive fuss and was so miserable. It was unbelievable. Because rather than saying, writer of Doctor Who and author of some things for DC Comics, Paul Cornell, Matt had written this introduction that basically like went through like some of, he said, so the line was, you may know him as the writer of Doctor Who and so on, but he is also the author of, and I can't even remember it was that we mentioned, but he immediately kind of butted in with, he went, oh, nice way to read through Wikipedia. And I just kind of gave him a sideways look. It's just like, this is just a bit of fun. Calm down.
Yes.
And then he was in an unbelievable strop for the rest of the thing and sort of stormed off at the end.
But also, he blocked me on Twitter because of some weird spat that's so Doctor Who, where lots of people were having a big argument on Twitter about whether the Talons of Wen Chang was a racist Doctor Who story or not. Which... It obviously is quite racist because it features like a Chinese homunculus, dwarf man, and God knows what. Yeah, but also it was made in 1977, and have you seen like It Ain't
Things
Our
Were Different
Mom
Back Then? Yeah.
It's just
it's a different time.
He blocked me over that, so I just thought, and I absolutely loved his novels when I was growing up as a teenager. Mm. I thought his Doctor Who novels were literally the DNA of Doctor Who.
So back to the shout though. Let's try and throw a rope around this. So what we then cut to, as Alan Bates says to Tim Curry, okay, well, everything I'm about to tell you is true. And the story begins. And once again, we're in
45 minutes into our podcast.
The story begins. Normal, standard, I'm saying. Yeah. So we're in Devon. We're very, very kind of countryside Devon on the coast, right down on the coast there.
Very pretty.
We see, I put down that John Hurt's character is either like he's channeling Delia Derbyshire or he's about to drop the hottest techno album of 2007, isn't he?
This part was amazing. And that's what that's what inspired me to bring this along tonight. Because I was like, where is this film going? He's suddenly got like Francis Bacon paintings pinned to his wall.
Yeah.
He's recording himself smoking a fag.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck is going on? And like, is he making an album or?
Yeah, and playing like a sardine tin with a violin bow and stuff. I just imagine what you spend
marbles
your day
in
doing.
A tin.
John.
To be honest.
Splash a bit of paint on a canvas.
To be honest, I did write, and you can see here, back to front, I want his studio.
Yeah.
Because his studio in it is amazing.
You know, he had a dog on a shelf. Like, his dog was like...
lived on a shelf.
Was up on a shelf.
I didn't see.
But yeah.
He's not Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen.
he's making some kind of like, I don't know if it's like experimental music or he's some kind of...
Yes.
We're told later on that he's a musician, isn't he? And because the other thing that he does is he plays the organ. he plays the organ in the local church.
Yeah.
And he's been filling in for the organist.
Yeah. So there's a nice shot. I like the bit when he's riding the bike along the side of the wall and to the church and goes through a little tunnel, and it's all done in one shot. Did you see that bit, John?
Or
did you
turn I will say the bits all. The bits that I watched up to were really beautifully filmed, a shot with this film. It is just lacking in, like, for me, half an hour in, and it's only 1 hour 22, this film, which
That's
is
right.
quite short. Where's the story and when is it going to start? Because it's called The Shout.
The Shout.
I've got half an hour in and I haven't heard a single shout. Not even a kind of... raised voice.
Hi, it's Ross from the General Witchfinders. Did you know that I also do another podcast with my friend David?
Hello. No, my headphones are falling off. You're not taking this seriously, Ross.
David and I do our own supernatural research and investigations in our home county of Dorset. So, if you think that's up your street, why don't you give it a listen? It's Dark Darset, D-A-R-Z-E-T. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not natural.
So as John Hurt is playing the organ in the church, which
I did notice that he really minces up the aisle as well in the church in a kind of John Inman way, like I'm free.
We see he leaves his bike on the wall, and then we see like a hand come out and let the tires down on the bike.
Mm. Yes,
and then John Hurt is sort of making eyes at the. It's the cobbler's wife, not the landlord's daughter.
Now, the cobbler's wife—that was Bergerac's girlfriend, wasn't it?
It's TV's. Yeah. I'm not sure. Is it really early on? Do you think? Because later on, it's Louise Jameson who was Leela in TV's Doctor Who. Right. But earlier, it's Carol Drinkwater, who is very attractive to me, and was in TV's All Creatures Great and Small. She was the original woman before Linda Bellingham took over.
Oh, okay.
So what Was she in Bergerac, James? This
I'm
is the question.
I might be just that was I didn't even bother to research. I just thought, oh, yes. Is that the woman who played Bergerac's girlfriend? But then you're she quite right. On, I think it probably is the way. I'm probably getting
trying to click
with
on
Louise
it.
Jameson.
It keeps bringing up adverts of Domino's Pizza. 1 second.
Of course it does.
Yeah,
Cleve.
Fuck off. I don't want any Domino's. She was in Clockwork Orange.
Not right now.
She was in Chalky.
Yes.
Was she?
Which we need to do Chalky at some point.
Chalky's brilliant.
And Chalky's Children. I think she played.
Oh. Chalky's Children.
She was in The Sweeney.
Is Chalky John Wyndham?
Or John Christopher.
Was that Chalky?
One of the two. Mm. Yeah.
Yes, John Christopher maybe, yeah.
No, not. In, she wasn't in, it's not as far as I can see, she wasn't in Bergerac. But she was in All Creatures Great and Small and Tales in the Unexpected.
Oh, of course Brilliant. She was.
And Chalky.
Every single person in British TV history was in
She wrote a novel called The Haunted School, which was turned into a TV miniseries.
Ooh.
No way. She's still alive, and I think she was on a TV series recently on something like Channel 5, because she lives somewhere like Provence now.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen and I watched it, and we're like, oh, that's she's a nice lady. That's a lovely place.
Okay. Right. So, yes.
What happened then, Cleves? Did someone walk over your grave?
No, I was trying to. I was reading the synopsis of The Haunted School.
Right. It sounds like a James Herbert novel, to be honest.
Fanny Crow, a young English teacher, struggles to establish a new school in the wilds of 19th century Australia as a superstitious local resident.
Fanny Crow. That's what this podcast should be called, Fanny Crow.
So while John Hurt's pumping his tires back up again.
Not pumping Carol drink water.
He does later on in a very much sort of Howard and Marina kind of going
does
off.
Does he really?
Going off on their bikes into the
Howard and Marina. So Howard and Marina, dear listener, anyone who's older than
under the age
45
of 40.
And outside of Britain are characters from a BBC sitcom called Last of the Summer Wine.
Which lasted longer than the communist, the communist Russia. So went on
who
forever.
Would elope on their bicycles to...
have a little bit of How's Your Father. They was
I don't think... We never saw them do anything, did we?
But you saw them coming out of like hay bales and stuff like that.
Yes.
I just thought it was really sad. Why can't Howard just leave... what was his wife's name in it? And just go off and live with
that miserable cow. Always driving around in a Triumph Herald with Beryl Reed. Not Beryl Reed, Thora Hurd.
Thora Hurd!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Anyway.
There we are.
Yeah.
On that bombshell.
Yeah, but that's when we get, what's his name? Alan Bates comes over, does his man spreading... obnoxious, over the top posturing, but he just starts telling them, I haven't eaten anything for days.
Oh, I know. And his stupid big coat that you can imagine some fucking goth wearing. He just reminded me of someone in the Welsh Club, as it used to be known, and I call it Club now, when I was a student, it was the Welsh Club in Cardiff. It was the indie club in Cardiff. Everyone went to the top floor, which is a night called Pop Scene. Mm. And you'd have a load of goth twats there who would only dance to
Bauhaus.
Bauhaus, yeah. The Breeders, Cannonball, or what are those other fuckers called that think they invented music? Where is my head?
Oh, where is the Pixies?
So they'd only dance to the Pixies. When Oasis came on, they'd go and sit down and they'd be like, I'm not going to dance to this fucking shit. So he looks like basically that person, doesn't he?
He's got like... He's so dirty. Yeah. When he takes his coat off one point, he's got all these horrible like grease stains all over his purple top.
He's probably got like nicotine stained fingers and stuff, hasn't he? Like smokes rollies. He's always cadging a fag off someone.
Yeah.
Well, fuck off.
These are all things which our listeners probably do, and they will switch it off one by one.
No, dear listeners, please don't take Ross's aspersions on your character to heart.
I am not anti-goth. I spend a lot of my time in churchyards. I draw pictures of ghosts. But there's a certain type of goth that is... They're never women. They're always male goths. And I think he's got it down to a T here. I don't know if that's deliberate, but he's just like... Oh, it's just boring.
So basically, he invites himself for Sunday dinner over to John Hurt's house.
I put down that he makes himself very comfortable. Very comfortable very quickly.
Yeah.
And he sits down and has dinner with John Hurt and John Hurt's actual wife.
Susan Hampshire.
Wait, so is it his real wife? Real life wife?
No, in the film.
Okay, sorry.
This is the point where my notes end, and it just says, should just tell him to fuck off.
Yeah.
Which is pretty, yeah. And what
it's that English sense of like,
oh, yeah.
Where you're just like, oh, yeah, of course, come in. Yeah, that's absolutely fine.
Mm.
Whereas actually, what you should say to someone like this is, no, mate, fuck off.
Yeah.
You're not coming in to meet my wife. I don't care if you haven't eaten, just fuck off. And that would be the end of the film, wouldn't it?
I was tired. I was hungry. Were you there? I was tired. I was hungry.
I was going to say, those were the principles that the British Empire was built on. Just fuck off.
But the creed and the colour and the were you there?
As dinner proceeds, John, so what happens then next is he says, where have you been and why are you so hungry? And he says, does he say, because the sound wasn't amazing, Ross, does he say he's been on a walking holiday?
No, he was in the outback.
Yes, then, we get on to that.
Yeah, and then he said that that he was out there for years. And
yes.
John Hurt goes, did you have like an Aboriginal wife? He goes, yes, I did. And then I killed our children, and then I've come back.
See,
yeah,
yes. So he says I've been out there for 18 years, and then he says, as Ross says about, you know, did you have any children? And he says, no. In Aboriginal culture, you have the right to kill your children if they are under a year old. And then the line is, does that shock you that I admit to killing my children?
Yeah, and then he feigns having a fit and like collapses on the table.
See, at this point, I'd ring the police, get him sectioned, end of the film, isn't it?
Yeah, and then he sort of dragged upstairs and put to bed, while then John Hurt goes and does some more like experiments.
Sounds.
Yeah. I wouldn't put him to bed in my own house.
No.
I'd literally just throw him onto the fucking pavement and say, mate, fuck off. James, are you drinking lemon barley water like it's Wimbledon?
It's WKD. No, it's Smirnoff Ice, isn't it?
It makes sure I've got enough energy for our high energy podcast. I'm drinking an energy drink, but it does look like lemon barley when you pour it out.
Yeah, it looks like Tim Henman's lemon barley water from 1996.
Right. Come on, Tim!
Come on, Tim!
Come on, Tim!
Wanker.
Exactly, yeah. Right, so what then proceeds to happen is they take in Alan Bates, and he and John Hurt then form a sort of fledgling friendship, and they start to sort of walk down and sort of go on walks to the coast, and he then kind of says to him, well, you know, I've learned lots of things by being with the Aborigines for 18 years. I have kind of learned their secrets. And there were magic men and things such as that.
And and John Hurt seems to know about some kind of magic you can have with a pointing bone or something like that. If you point a bone at someone.
That's the line that I've put down. We've all had the bone pointed at us at some point, haven't we, lads?
Yeah. I did on a beach in Australia and had to chase the man away.
I saw a flaccid one on a beach in a place called Monknash in South Wales.
Yeah. Yeah, a man was pointing at some young girls, and I stood up and started shouting, "You're disgusting!" And he ran away,
pointing with his bone.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, out of his trouser leg.
You're disgusting. he's earlier on. He dropped his bone in the cricket box, didn't he?
Yes,
he did,
yes. So we get that, and he says they have this thing that, you know, if you point a bone at a person, they can die. And then one of the other mystical powers they have is, he says, "I've seen a magic man go up to another person and while he's sleeping and remove his kidneys."
Oh, is that what he's doing? Oh, his hand. Oh, I didn't understand what that was going on.
Yeah. And remove his kidneys from inside him. Then drain the fat from around them and place him back in his body. And that man will be dead the next day.
See, I've seen this film 7 times. I can't remember that at all. I can remember him like poking around in his stomach. Once. But he also tells him that he can shout someone to death.
And now we get to the crux of it. Yeah. He says that that's one of the powers that they have. He can shout someone to death. And then,
this is the point where I'd say, all right, mate, hop on, get the next bus into town. I don't want to see you again. This is where films like this, I don't know if I've got a low tolerance of people, but when I overtake people in the middle lane of the motorway, I stare them out. Yeah. And Hell says, why are you staring them?
Yeah, like, get over.
They're doing the wrong thing. They're meant to, there's one lane and there's two overtaking lanes.
Correct.
And I'm quite, if someone's talking shit, I will go up to them and say, mate, no. I'm not having it. And I think, this is the central problem with a film like this, is that it's like John Hurt is putting it, John Hurt's going to suffer because of this, isn't he?
No, but one of the things he's saying is that all relationships, the way people can have power over you is entirely because you let that happen to you. You can have abusive relationships, but again, it's all down to you being allowing that to happen.
Yes. And that's the point where John Hurt should just knock him out.
Exactly. Yeah. So John Hurt gets a bit stroppy about it and then goes, okay, then prove it. So he goes, all right, let's go down the beach. And then he said, you might want to bring a bit of
cotton wool.
Yeah, it's wax out of a candle. So he said,
but. John Bates tells him cotton wool, but you're quite right. He puts wax into his ears. First of all, he's like, do it now.
Yeah.
And then he says, no, I can't. If I do that, everyone around us would die. And he's like, oh, all right then. So they agree that they will go somewhere distant, in inverted commas. And then he's like, I will start shouting. When you can't handle it anymore, point at your ears.
Yeah.
Which is very good and very scientific. He then unleashes the shout, which I put down. I quite likes.
Yeah. And you see the enormous amount of fillings this man's got.
Yeah. The dentistry. I thought, when did he get those done during his 18 years in Australia? There's a lot of gold fillings going on out of bases now.
Which makes John Hurt grab his head like Captain Kirk always did. There was a noise on the Enterprise.
And he falls... head over heels.
Like James is a young boy falling down Cork Castle.
Correct. One of the few scrapes with death. So he goes down. But then we also see in a really fast cut that the shepherd / farmer who we saw John Hurt going past earlier is within the blast radius of the shell.
Oh, you're joking.
And he and all the sheep just dropped dead.
Yeah.
You're joking.
No. And then the insane thing is that John Hurt comes to and he's like blathering on about shoes.
Oh, yeah.
He?
Yeah. But this is where it takes a massive leap. And I thought, I bet the book explains this more. It doesn't. So basically, he falls to the bottom of the hill and touches a stone. And the stone he touches is the soul of the cobbler. So when he touches it, he becomes, he challenges the cobbler. So he, for some reason, there's loads of stones in the dunes, and each one of them is the soul of someone in the village.
That's are one any of the magic them sheep? Powers.
No, they're all just stones.
Oh.
Is that something to do with what they say earlier on where they're talking about that tree is mad and that tree?
Yes, to a certain degree. Mad. Yeah, you know, yeah. That
Cleaver can't remember this part. Yes,
yeah, I can remember that bit, but it doesn't make sense. They didn't make sense in the book or in the film. But
well, it's just that thing that that all, you know, just if something is, you know, even if something is seemingly not alive, it can be, it can have a larger significance.
Oh, we forgot to mention the buckle as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but basically he's stolen the buckle of the woman's shoe. That's why he's
stolen the buckle when they're on the beach, which... Yeah. Is the same beach that they see the Aborigine man on, which is meant to be a desert, but it's not a desert. It's just obvious.
And also something which happens at that point, which is more obvious in the book, that they're both having the same dream of that man.
That's what I would have questioned at that point.
Mm.
And this is something that happens in M.R. James stories, and the characters discuss it and say, isn't it strange that we're having the same dream?
Mm.
But in this, they're like, they don't even mention the fact that it must be weird that they're both having the same dream at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's just a weird aside. So then this is the part where John Hurt's mostly in bed after this point. And
it absolutely bugs him up.
Alan Bates is basically taking over his place in the house. Like,
So with the significance of the buckle is that we also learn, Alan Bates then says, one of the other things that I learned from Aboriginal culture is that if you want to win the heart of a woman, all you need to do is take a trivial item that belongs to her and then do some spells upon it. And then she will fall in love with you or until such time as you don't want her anymore. And that's exactly what happens, is that she gets really, really into Alan Bates. And they end up having a really odd sex scene where she just runs up to him, lifts up his shirt, and just starts kissing his back.
Yeah, and then she gets naked and then does some poses from the Francis Bacon,
the Bacon
pictures.
The buggers.
Yeah,
that's what Lucian Freud. That's what Lucian Freud used to call his favorite of Francis Bacon.
So. This is when John Hurt realizes that if there's the soul of one person in the things, if he can try and find the stone, which is the soul of Alan Bates, he can then destroy him.
So
he goes.
So how are the souls of the people
put
into these stones? Okay, great.
It's not explained at all. But then there's a lot more cutting backwards and forwards to the cricket match as well as we're going towards the end.
Oh, okay.
And people are starting to get the crazy people are getting a bit more agitated, and Alan Bates is doing things like sharpening his bone into like a point,
and we're told there's a thunderstorm brewing.
I'm not sure you can use the phrase crazy people, Cleaves.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's one of the people. Lunatics?
The patients in the asylum.
the people who are the patients in the asylum. Okay,
right. Nutters.
Can I just ask at this juncture? Have you both seen Ennis Main?
Yes.
I haven't, but I'm very aware of it.
So both Cleavers have seen Ennis Main. So I've seen online that the shout heavily influences Ennis Main.
Okay.
Can you see that, Cleaves? Because from what I saw, I couldn't see any influence at all.
No. No, the shout's got like 400% more story than Ennis Main.
Yes. Yeah. Did you see that it's opened in America today or yesterday?
With Bates as well. Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you see, the director had a chat with me on Twitter.
Has he?
Yeah. Yes, he's a nice guy. It's a good film, James, but it's weird and it's way too long.
Yeah.
Right.
I remember I was about halfway through. No. First third, I was like, fuck, this is really long. Two first thirds, I was thinking, I'm starting to get into this now. And then last third, I was like, this is way too long. It needed.
There was someone snoring behind us, and Hell didn't like it a lot. But we had a night, we went to Bristol, and we had a nice day out.
And someone in our audience was like clapping, saying, that's the best thing I've ever seen at the end.
Really? Wow. I think it's one of those films where you're like, yeah, that's amazing. Or, I couldn't care less.
Mm.
It's very, if you've got a kind of, if you like the Cornish landscape, then I think that really helps. And if you can watch an hour and a half of the Cornish landscape, then that's nice, isn't it? But
maybe that's the influence, because there's very heavy sort of landscape shots.
Yeah. You might be right, James, actually. Yeah. We did you realise that we found the farm, Cleves?
Found the farm of what?
In Ennismain, you know, the farm where the house is.
Yeah.
We found it in Cornwall. So where men and Tolly. So I tweeted the picture and I copied Mark Denkin in. Where men and Tolly's, which is the two stones and then the circular stone with a hole through the middle.
Mm-hmm.
We went to find that, and it's basically like 2 miles up this track.
Oh, cool.
So we started off driving, and it's like, oh, this is okay. Then basically we needed a 4x4. Hell was shitting itself. I just kept driving.
Or a 2CV with a couple more French peasants in the back. Yeah. You'd be fine.
The car started scraping along these massive stones, and we were like all over the place in the car. We finally got to Men and Toll and went to have a look at it. And then when I looked across, I was like, I'm sure that's the farm from Ennismain.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to have a look, and then when we got home, it is the farm that they use in the But it's a total ruin. So when it's in the film that it is inhabited, they must have done all that
with
set dressing,
yeah,
which is really good because it's totally derelict. Mm-hmm. It's like there's no roof or anything. So it looks really good. But I would recommend it, James, just even to hear what you think of it. I don't know when it comes out on DVD or anything.
I would say, for me, I could only watch it in the cinema because I wouldn't have sat through it at home.
Oh, yeah, in the house with Cleaver's attention span.
So.
Watching three films at the same time, like David Bowie in The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Yep, that's me.
No, I was going to say, so you're quite right, Ross, that there's that point where John Hurt decides that he needs to locate the stone in order to sort of take control of his soul. Obviously, that's what's going on. And what I put is that he then sort of runs from his cottage to run down to the beach. And what I put is this has got very strong Peggy vibes. The way John Hurt runs is the way that you would run when you were a kid and you were having to get away from somewhere really quickly.
Chased by Podgy Jones.
Exactly. I didn't want to bring that up again.
Or if you're a Bobby knocker.
He doesn't sort of pump his arms left and right like that. He just kind of goes...
Like Harrison Ford.
Run! which I found very, very funny. And then when he kind of returns to the house, Alan Bates is there, and I've just to paraphrase it, he basically just says, I'm going to be shagging your wife.
Yeah.
Do one.
Yeah.
that's going to be happening later on.
So then he goes and finds a stone and smashes it with his shoe, and then which makes Alan Bates sort of fall down the stairs.
Yeah.
But also while that's happening, the police have turned up.
Yes.
And it's a bit like the end of the Holy Grail.
Yeah. Well, what happens, John, is like Nick. So, John Hurt has run out and run out of the building. The police, first of all, do they grab Susanna York and drag her out, or does she come outside? I can't quite remember that. But anyway, I put they really rough her up unnecessarily.
Yeah.
They sort of grab hold of her and sort of throw
That's
her about.
That's the police, James, isn't it?
That's right.
And whilst the police are trying to struggle to get Alan Bates out of the house, he shouts.
Wait. One copper goes into the house, and once again, weird sort of ADR. I have come to arrest you for the murder of your children.
Yeah.
He says, I have come to arrest you for the murder of your children. And then he goes, you bloody fools, I'll shout you all.
And he shouts, freeze frame.
Yeah, and then there's a really weird freeze frame of Alan Bates doing the shout and the copper next to him going...
Yeah. And then we go back to the cricket match. Thunder and lightning starts going off. Jim Broadbent takes all his clothes off and starts smearing cow shit all over him.
Stop, Ross, stop. I want to bring up at this point, this one, I'm like, wait a minute, this is
that
wild
true?
Yes, this that, but this is when it gets a bit like, I know, probably him telling the story, et cetera, but it's like, wait a minute, 5 minutes ago, we were told he has to do the shout miles away from everybody else because everyone in the close proximity will die. Well, we've just seen him do it inside a house, and all the people that were stood outside are absolutely fine.
Yeah.
So he said he could do different levels of the shout.
Okay? Oh,
and maybe he's been weakened because he's had his soul stone smashed up with a shoe.
Yeah. would, Alan Bates would has been undone by good cobbling.
Would a shoe smash a stone?
But if it's a special soul stone,
yes,
maybe.
Because we've missed out a bit when John Hurt went to see the cobbler and said, can you put some steel in my heels?
Yeah.
And then when the cobbler is being like quite slow in doing it, John Hurt just sort of takes over the operation.
Yes. There's also a bit where the cobbler was saying that he had the... when he fell out of bed when John Hurt picked up his stone.
Yes. He's like, don't tell me that. It's really weird.
I can't wait to watch the rest of this film.
Oh, mate, it's mad. So, yes, and then having Alan Bates been arrested, it then cuts back to, as Ross says, the cricket match. A thunderstorm breaks out. Start off with, they're like, the guy who runs the asylum is like, don't worry, there's nothing wrong, it's just a shower. But then all of the psychiatric patients start going mad, including young Jim Broadbent, who earlier had put his hand in a cowpat. Yes. He now runs back to the cowpat and starts rubbing it all over himself.
With his naked body.
And stripping off.
And then he starts pushing the scoring box around.
Yeah.
Whilst Tim Curry and Alan Bates having a fight with the... and then it gets...
Well, Tim Curry says to him, you have the power. Something along those lines. It's like, you have the power. You can do it.
Yeah, and then Tim Curry manages to jump out the window. But then it gets hit by lightning. And then they open the door.
At the very moment that he's doing the shout.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the door opens and they're all like...
They're all freeze frame dead.
Again. Yeah.
So Alan Bates is dead. The guy who is running the psychiatric hospital is dead. And
Robert Stevens.
And Jim Broadbent is dead.
Yeah.
So how does Alan Bates die? Because he's been struck by lightning.
Yeah, he's in the scorer's box. And when he did the shout, it got hit by lightning. And that killed him. And then that is the scene that we saw at the start.
Yes.
With the three dead men have been put in the room, in the hall. And she turns up and sees him dead there. But then I was like, wait a minute, wait, hold on. So how comes John Hurt was playing in this cricket match?
Yes.
And how come she's... And that's when I started realizing, oh, wait, is Alan Bates just using people that you see around to populate the story? And what has actually happened here?
Is it just bullshit?
Yes. Also that.
Is it a film about bullshit?
Yeah, and in the book, it makes it rather unsatisfactory end to the story to say that Rachel and Richard were friends with whom I was staying. So this is who's Tim Curry. Tim Curry's.
Yeah.
Right. It makes it rather unsatisfactory to end the story to say that Richard and Rachel were friends with whom I was staying. Crossley had described them most accurately, but when I told them that the man Charles Crossley had been struck at the same time as their friend the doctor, they seemed to take Crossley's death casually in comparison to this. Richard looked blank, and Rachel said, Crossley, I think that man who called himself the Australian illusionist and gave the wonderful conjuring show the other day, he had practically no apparatus but a black silk handkerchief, and I liked his face so much. Oh, Richard didn't like him at all. So basically, in the book, they're saying that he didn't even know them. He just made it all up.
Yes. Really, really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, and then it goes to the end and it's done.
Really?
Yeah. And now YouTube is showing me a film called Corvette Summer from 1978.
Featuring Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
That's the film that Mark Hamill made right after Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then weirdly, the film that John Hurt made after this was Alien.
Yeah.
Where he's kind of wearing similar clothes, I thought. When he's mincing along in the church, I thought, God, he's wearing like khaki clothes in Alien, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what do we think?
It's intriguing.
I've come back to liking it a bit better again.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to give it two, I think.
What I saw, the 30 minutes I saw, was very thought-provoking and very pretty. Mm. But what you've described sounds like an absolute load of old cobblers. So,
literally, there is some hardcore cobbler action in it.
It just sounds very strange. And I think I was expecting a different film where someone comes back to life who's dead and it's in Cornwall and I can't remember what it's called. But I think that's a different film. So I'm not sure this is the film that I thought I was going to watch. And I can't remember what that's called either. I think Jenny Agutter's in that, but
Well, I thought it was going to be this one about a man who could predict or make disasters happen, but that's another film which you've...
That's The Medusa Touch with Richard Burton. Mm.
Yeah, that's what I thought I was going to watch.
That's amazing. I love that film. We should potentially put that on the list.
I will do, yeah. How about you, John? Can you score for the first half hour?
I can't. I shouldn't give a score. I don't think that's fair.
Well, maybe you could watch it before the next episode and give us a retrospective.
Yes, score. I will do that. I will do that. James, because I paid £2.50 on BFI.
You going to watch it? Oh, you going to score it, James?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a two as well, because as Mark Hermo said, it's got low-key weirdness to it. I was really pleased that I watched it, and I said at the start how I once saw a weird scene from it as a young man. So it's really nice to sort of
put the full circle.
Full circle. Quite beautifully put. Come full circle and see what the film was actually about. And I think there was something interesting afoot there as regards the whole, has this happened or what's going on? And is this a story within a story? That is really ambitious. And of course, said it looked beautiful. I think of when it was shot, late 70s, it did just kind of give me that really kind of nostalgia thing of how the world looks when I was really young. Mm. So I didn't think, what an absolute waste of my time. But at the same time, I did also think it was mental.
One of the things
that's my final note. Just put mental.
Yeah. One of the things I read is that the guy who wrote the story, Robert Graves, he was a bisexual chap who was in in an open marriage, and apparently he split up a marriage by sort of putting himself into it, and also his wife split up someone's marriage by putting himself into it as well. So this is kind of inspired by some of the kind issues which happened in open marriages caused him, and the fact that
semi-autobiographical then in some way.
And I'm going to read some more of the other stories in here. And the fact that this is, this is written quite early. Some of the themes and stories that feel quite contemporary, even though this is written was it the 30s? Is it?
Oh, it's that? No, it can't have been.
Well, he was in the First World War.
Was he?
Yeah.
Graves?
Yeah. He was wrote a book about his when he was a young officer in the First World War.
Well, he's not the same age as Spike Milligan then, because Spike was born in 1918, I think.
So he was born in 1895.
Oh. It seems to be a weird relic from an era of British cinema and cinema in general where... more British cinema, actually, where British cinema totally lost its way in the 70s, was really popular and really successful in the 40s, 50s and 60s. Mm. And then in the 70s was just like, all they really made was sex films. Mm. And like, Confessions of a Window Cleaner and stuff like this. And people who had been really successful directors... our friend who did Quatermass Experiment, whose name I've totally forgotten off the top of my head at the moment, and all I can think of is Val Kilmer.
All I can think of is Dick Bush, but...
It's not Dick Bush. Val Guest. Val Guest, a very talented guy, ended up doing, Confessions of a Window Cleaner and stuff. Mm. And I think this film is from that era of British cinema where they weren't in the 80s where they knew what to do with these big stars yet. So they were kind of putting people, massive stars like Alan Bates, in these really weird films that no one wanted to watch. Mm. So they were, they were still some way away from success of Chariots of Fire and stuff like that. Mm. But they were making stuff like this. And this isn't a kind of marketable or kind of...
I think people went to see it for the sound. I've got a machine which can do 40 tracks. Okay, what can we do with this? I've got the rights for a thing called The Shout. Let's do that.
Yeah, definitely. And so I think a lot of these films were tax breaks for people who probably didn't know what the fuck they were doing at the time.
Yes, Rossminster. The 1970s accountancy firm that, they funded the movie Scum. That was a tax loss movie. Exactly. So, you might be onto something there, John.
Yeah, so I think it's just this weird era in British cinema where they were between, you know, they were between like massive figures like Powell and Pressburger and that era.
Mm.
And then they still, you know, they didn't have the stuff that was happening with like, you know, this is like 15 years before Trainspotting or anything that was showed any semblance of is that commercial.
Is this film closer to Trainspotting than we are to Trainspotting now?
Massively, yeah.
78 to 90, well, they made Trainspotting in 1994. It came out in 95, yeah. I'm going to say.
That's
eight. That's 18 years.
That's mental.
There's less than 20 years between them. So it is mad to think that this was a real wilderness era for British cinema where, like James says, the only stuff that was coming out was stuff like Scum or I struggle to think of anything really. You know, stuff was made in Britain like Star Wars or I'm trying to think of other stuff, you know, James Bond films. But otherwise, the British film industry at that point was like sex comedy films, like Confessions of a Window Cleaner or
List of British films from 1978.
Yeah, go on then, Cleves.
The Big Sleep, The Boys from Brazil, Carry On Emmanuel.
Boys from
Death on the Nile.
Houston Office version,
The Legacy of Leopard in the Snow, Let's Get Laid, Long Shot, Midnight Express, Nighthawks, The Odd Job, The Shout, obviously, The Stud, Superman.
Oh, exactly. Like, you couldn't call Superman a British film, though, can you?
It's Sweeney 2, The 39 Steps.
Brilliant.
Oh, with Robert Powell.
Wild Geese, Watership Down.
Yeah, so it's basically when people like Lou Grade were propping up, Lord Lou Grade was propping up the British film industry with stuff like The 39 Steps, Robert Powell, who was, again, like a bit like Alan Bates, Tim Curry, sorry, went on to be a big star in America and play Jesus and stuff.
Mm.
But it was just like, otherwise, it's just shit. Like, Carry On Emmanuel.
Yeah. It's weird to think that John Hurt made this the same year he made Watership Down. Right.
An alien.
Yep.
Mm.
Okay. So
there we are.
Are we going to, I think we talked about Ennis Main, so that's kind of my, something horrific. Anyone want to talk about anything else? Yeah, go on then.
Well, saw this in a branch of Tesco's, and when I messaged, Ross immediately told me to buy it.
Yes.
Because if ever you draw a Venn diagram, if you draw a Venn diagram of people that would go to see a psychic and then people that would buy Take a Break magazine, much beloved of this parish, I mean, we used to, you know, look at past episodes where I was talking about Take a Break magazine, you would find that that Venn diagram is just one single big circle. Mm-hmm. So some genius in the world of publishing has now done Take a Break, Fate and Fortune.
Whoa.
It's a spooky version of Take a Break.
Oh, my hubby's ghost is
trying to split us up. Evicted by a shoe mad ghoul.
What the fuck?
And have a spiritual spring clean, declutter your home and your mind.
Yep.
It's
only the man who lived at the ancient Ram Inn.
Right.
That article.
So
Psychic Helpline.
Psychic Helpline.
Well, it definitely hasn't got Mystic Meg in it, who's recently...
Who's the part gone to the world of the spirits. Yeah. Yeah, so here are some of the letters that have been sent into the magazine. Did I get a glimpse of the future? Should I go to a seance? Why can't I be a psychic like my sister? Will our business be a success? And what was that smell?
Beck says that every morning.
Well, exactly. Tell her to write to the psychic headline.
What was that smell?
What could all these dark thoughts be about? That's will I lose weight for my son's wedding? And look who she's asking.
What? What's that got to do with ghosts? Oh my God.
Ask the ghosts. But yeah.
Is that about incredible. Predicting the future and saying, will I lose weight?
Meet the psychic cleaner.
Just stop eating.
Yeah. The witch that makes you rich. Incredible. I thought it says walking with angels, but I didn't think that's what it said. For a moment, I was like, whoa, that's taking a turn. Anyway. But yeah,
the only something horrific thing I've got really this month, a week, a year, a Texas the psychic horse.
Anyway, sorry, John.
Is that the original name for the band?
Yeah, yes. I think that was their album title.
The only horrific thing I've got this month is my disappointment with Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen on Help My House Is Haunted.
Right. Oh. I didn't know he was on it.
Yeah, well, they do celebrity Help My House Is Haunted. So they, the other celebrities, I don't know who they are, to be fair. But so I was really excited to see Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen on there. And his daughter was on there. His daughter was very invested in the process. But he was very drab and boring, and he didn't really seem to enter into the spirit.
It's as if he, like, his dress sense is trying to overcompensate for a drab and boring personality, do you think?
Yeah. So I was really disappointed that I thought that it would be, he'd play up to it, but he really didn't. And I just thought that was very disappointing.
Was his house haunted?
They thought so, yes. And his daughter had a lot of supernatural experiences in there. But you could tell that...
Was she evicted by a shoe mad ghoul?
Did you see recently that there's been a lot of gossip on Twitter kicking off about Zach Bagans and other people about how he's had shows cancelled on Discovery Plus?
No.
Yeah, you need to investigate this. It's the empire of Zach Bagans is crumbling.
Mm. Well,
he's done a feature film.
The original Ghost Adventures was a film, but is that the feature film you're talking
about?
It's
called Something House. Let me have a look.
Something House.
House.
IMDb. I don't need to look after Zach Bagans.
Bleak House.
How do you spell Zach? Z-A-K.
Z-A-K. It's three letters, Caves.
But it could be Z-A-C.
It wasn't him in Benji Zach's and the Alien Prince,
Benji
was it?
Benji Zach and the Alien Prince.
It's a film called Demon House.
Oh, never
heard of it. Paranormal Investigator, Zach Bagans documents the most authentic case of possession in American history.
I think I might have seen that edited into like a TV. Format.
Yeah. Someone's having a go at us the other day saying that we slag off James Herbert, but we think Zach Bagans is good. So that we obviously don't know what we're talking about.
Is that true? Yeah. Someone said that on Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. I need to see that. I can't believe someone really said that to us.
Yeah. And they keep saying do the fog, and they've even left us a review on Apple Podcasts just saying do the fog.
Yeah. Okay, we'll do the fog. And then we'll talk about the time I'm sure that I remember James Herbert coming onto a TV show like on a Harley Davidson with loads of smoke around him.
Yes. That was when he did that World War II thing, wasn't it, Ross?
Yeah. Yeah. What? 48. Yeah. It was the book launch of 48, yeah.
Ross remembers it.
Okay. Okay.
Fucking hell.
Well, I read all of the fog. So I'm ready to do that episode when you guys are. So.
All you read it for was when they beat the teacher's erect penis with a load of cricket stumps.
Yeah. That's all I do anything for. All right. Okay. It's going to be hard to cut, because I'm not leaving any of that in, so stop laughing so this makes sense.
Okay.
Okay. The next episode we are going to be doing The Woman in Black, the ITV version.
Are we?
Yeah. Cool.
Which is from 1989.
Nigel Neal.
Adapted by Nigel McNeil, but based on Susan Hill's acclaimed chiller. So we're going to be doing that. It sounds like one of those old computer games, isn't it? Where it, like you got to try and keep your car on the on the track.
Well, that's good. I'm looking forward to that. It's long though, isn't it?
On here, there's a feature version. Which is so we need to decide if we're going to watch the TV version or the feature version.
The feature version.
Okay, but I don't know how you're gonna. I have to work out how you guys are going to see it. That's all. So,
good idea.
Again, and just one quick thing from me. I wanted to say, last time we did this, I started saying, oh, this is a really good book and it's fantastic. And then I went, oh, I can't remember what it's called. It's gone. So just in case anyone, I very much doubt anybody really was going, what was that book, Chase? It's The Premonitions Bureau.
Well,
it's a book called The Premonitions Bureau. Premonitions.
Why were you talking about that?
It was because we mentioned the disaster Wales, John. Where is it? Where the slag heap hit the town?
Aberfan.
Thank you. We were talking about the Aberfan disaster, and I said, "Oh, that's been in the book that I've been reading recently." And then the title would totally went out of my head. Hmm. But it was The Premonitions Bureau, which is superb. Thank you.
Oh, okay,
got that out of the system.
Right. Until next time, listener.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us for 35 episodes. As always.
Yeah.
35. See, the thing is, my MR James podcast I listen to, they haven't done an episode for 4 months, which is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, people will be screaming out for this. This is nearly a month since our last one.
Yeah.
Is it really? God.
Every single one high quality.
Just like the films we review.
Well, you've got it.
Well, I know we've got at least one listener who just listens to them on loop while they sleep. And we've started to infiltrate their dreams.
I'm so sorry.
In an oxygen tent. And the other day I was watching a Vincent Price film and thinking, I don't think I like any Vincent Price film.
I agree.
What about that picture of him that I tweeted where he'd been to a sweet shop while making Witchfinder General and had a load of sherbet dip dabs?
Yeah.
That was an incredible image.
Didn't see that. You're going to have to find that, James.
Also, the caterers didn't turn up one time and he cooked for the whole cast and crew because he's a gourmet chef, apparently.
But yeah, that's true. He did his own book, didn't he, or something?
Well, so listeners, if you can recommend a Vincent Price film, which is any good. Last time you recommended a Vincent Price film to us listeners was fucking Dr. Fibes. So we're not going to...
Yeah, absolute shit. And it's not the one where they go under the sea, whatever the fuck that one is, because that is absolutely dire.
Oh, there is The House on Haunted Hill? That's one of his, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
Tingler. Yeah, he's not good.
No. Well, I like Vincent, but his films were just bullshit, weren't they? Let's face it. Okay. He's no Peter Cushing.
No one is.
On that bombshell.
Absolutely. Until next time, people, stay safe and thank you for listening.
Okay, happy day. Bye-bye, everyone.
Love, light, and peace, everyone.
You have been listening to The General Witchfinder. Support the show and continue the conversation at patreon.com/generalwitchfinders. Subscribe and spread the word at generalwitchfinders.com. Farewell, and don't have nightmares.